Now, let me try to give you some overview of the position that the council finally reached. The council looked at the features of the various segments of activity which have traditionally underpinned, I guess, a dispersed and fragmented space industry in Australia. And we tried to look to global trends that we thought may have represented a special opportunity for Australia at the moment. And the global trends that seemed to us to be important were that the period of space spectaculars were probably going to be a thing of the past. That change was largely due to the fact that the East and West, namely Russia and America, would not be competing for some form of technological supremacy symbolically stated by their intrusions into space. The second, that the same change in relationships between East and West were going to change the nature of defence expenditure. Its relationship, I guess, as a the defence industry to the civil industry was going to change, and that increasingly defence expenditure was going to be questioned. And the evidence of that, of course, is with us every day. And the next thing was that we noticed, of course, was that governments everywhere, of whatever persuasion, were looking to activities in the public sector which were classified broadly as user pay. Now, they were trends that we seemed to be facing, and we questioned ourselves what that would mean in terms of Australia's access to information that it received today at either at a highly subsidised rate or at no expenditure at all. We didn't have any doubt that the relationships, say, in terms of meteorological data and certain research data would remain, and that those relationships would lead to free access to data. On the other hand, it's pretty clear that in a real political sense, a country like Australia, as a developed nation, is going to be in pretty poor political shape if, in fact, it's not making technological contributions in order to be a respectable member of that community. And we recognise that as a particular challenge that we must keep. We noticed that the private sector retrieval of certain information was going to lead to encryption, and that we were going to have to pay for that, and that as a nation we had a responsibility to see if, in fact, some independent capacity in a number of areas was not a desirable thing. Now, those forces that I've described, as Malcolm pointed out, seem to us to be leading to a range of options at the small end. The space industry has been dominated by very large players, supported by the relationship between the United States and Russia, and supported by defence. And it appeared to us that what we were seeing emerge in the world space industry were a number of smaller players trying to prescribe for themselves a commercial position in niche markets that fitted between these giants, and in which, as often happens in these cases, the giants were not going to be able to participate. Their infrastructures, their overheads, their approaches were such that they were not going to be competitors. So, to us, this example that was going to emerge, and there seems plenty of evidence of this, and have you got the overhead that points to the scope of the star systems and small satellite constellations that are on the drawing board? Perhaps if you could just... would you put your hand over that lens? It would probably be the sensible thing, Alan. Malcolm's got a couple of overheads here that sort of talk about the extent of the planning that's going on. 48 satellites is the potential of the planning at $275 million in Globalstar, Iridium 66 satellites, $800 million, Teledesic 840 satellites at $9 billion, with highly credible organisations as participants in those activities. Orbcomm, 24 satellites at $150 million. The CRSS remote sensing, $300 million, eyeglass, $300 million. Now, I think no one would be pretending anywhere that all of those projects are going to get off the ground, but we believe that that some of them will, and we believe that they represent the future. And the reason why they will cost less, of course, is that they are not going to be in geostationary orbits. They're going to be in orbits at about 1,000 kilometers above the Earth. They're going to recede back and destroy themselves after 5 years. They are going to be small, of course, and their technology is going to be different because with a different lifetime, the redundancy that is built in and the nature of the technology will be different. They are genuinely low price. And, of course, as Malcolm pointed out, if they're going to represent a business, and the business is, of course, that people will supply, will pay for the services that they deliver, then one must be able to put them up into space at a low cost. The next thing that seemed to dictate where we went or where the industry was going to go was that no nation or no company is going to be able to do that by themselves. So we're going to see consortia emerging between nations where it's not only going to be the space lab that's between the major players, but the sharing of technology in putting these small rockets and the small satellites is going to be a dynamic part of that future. I think it's worth noting that the Express program, which I don't think you mentioned, that is one of our international collaborative programs that's going to finish up with the collection of certain space materials into Woomera, is a collaboration between the German and the Japanese using a Russian capsule. And that type of collaboration, I think, is going to characterize the industry. Now, in respect to the opportunities that may exist in this commercial environment, not only does Australia have a chance, I think, because it is a small entry ticket, whereas it's fair to say that the entry ticket previously was perhaps beyond an initial response from Australian industry, was the fact that there is a very great interest in the space-related activity in Asia. And I don't have any doubt at all in saying that leave out Japan, that Australia is technologically more advanced than the people that are could be our competitors, indeed the people that we can serve in the Asian region. Now, I guess the next important observation that we made was that those countries that had a coherent space industry as distinct from ours, which appeared to be fragmented and dispersed, were not simply the countries that had some huge central space agency. And indeed, I think for a place like the Space Council or the Space Office to propagate in this country the view that we should have a centralized space agency, the first thing that we could be sure is that they had committed political suicide immediately. So that sort of solution is inappropriate to our culture anyhow. On the other hand, what we did notice, that the other characteristic of those countries that had a coherent space industry were that they had what we've called an end-to-end capacity. That is, that they are involved in launch, they are involved in the technology of satellite manufacture, and they are heavily involved in the delivery of services from those satellites. And we ask ourselves whether there was not an opportunity at this point of time, with the changing nature of the industry and the natural and technological advantages that we had as a country, that there wasn't a chance for Australia to enter this new generation of space industry. We believe that there is an opportunity, that it may exist for a couple of years, and that it requires us somehow to uniquely produce a concert between public and private activity. The advantages that Australia has are, first of all, geographic. These small rockets that we talk about have to get themselves into equatorial orbits for communications industry in two stages. Their launch, therefore, has to be not much further from the equator than 10 degrees. We have such a site in and around Darwin. We have the space available for the recapture of experiments placed into orbit, and of course that points to the Express program and the recapture in the Woomera area. And then we have stable weather in those regions and plenty of open space that other countries do not have. For instance, the Japanese launch facility, at least by the cynics, is said to be available to them for a matter of a few days a year, hardly the basis for running a commercial launch service. The next thing that we have, we believe to be very important indeed, and that is our political credentials. These small rockets we describe are, in another environment, offensive weapons. The rocket motors are simply the rocket motors that have been used to power objects that have been pointed by one nation at another. In fact, it's fair to say that some of the, when we talk to the Russian people who have motors available, they say, oh yes, we have 110 of those in stock. They clearly didn't have them in stock for commercial purposes. So what we have are technologies that are otherwise weapons. And Australia is an immaculate signatory to a whole range of non-proliferation agreements. And without making too fine a point, I invite you to go home now or even think in your own mind now at the countries that are actually within 10 degrees of the equator and ask yourself how many countries in that collection would America be prepared to license in the technologies that we refer to. Now, I'm not saying that America would reject putting that technology in if Australia failed to manifest its present advantage, but at least in a short length of time, I think Australia more than any other country has a capacity to get those technology in here. The next thing is that we do, in my view, have the technological capacity to do these things at the moment in this industry. I think if you look at the Cape York proposal, which we haven't rejected at all, we simply take the same attitude to that as any other proposal, namely if the commercial money is there, we will support it. But the Cape York capacity was going to be implanted on the Australian technological culture. We believe that we have the capacity to grow or evolve into the activity that we talk about. Now, the project of national significance is simply a warning to government that if we are going to be able to manifest this opportunity, then there must be a public investment. But it is a politically and economically realistic approach, in that what we are saying is that we cannot sustain it if the previous attitudes persist. And the previous attitudes have been that the public sector has blamed the private sector for not finding, in this case, 900 million, and the private sector has blamed the public sector for not finding the resources. The project of national significance is an attempt to bring public and private investment together in the creation of an industry. What the Space Office and the Council will be doing in this first 12 months is carrying out certain tasks, most of which Malcolm has referred to, and they are tasks in which we will get market information of the opportunities that are real. They will be shared as public knowledge with private investors, many of whom are speaking to us. And we will look at what equity capital, private equity capital, is available. And we will be studying what holes exist in that pattern in terms of the creation of a self-sustaining industry. We have warned government that we, in looking at this with our present level of knowledge, that it could be of the order of $40 million over 3 years. We believe that part of that will be to launch a couple of satellites. But we recognize that there are other possibilities. Say one of the commercial ventures that we have in front of us can raise the capital to support 6 satellites and 2 launches. And that company comes to us and says, we can get these satellites made for $2 million in America. And an emerging company in Australia that's talking to us says, well, we could do the last 4 and any future ones for $2 million, but there are non-recurring costs that would make the first 2 $4 million. We believe we would then have a case, because of the existence of the private willingness and capital, to go to government to say we will put $4 million into that to make sure that that manufacture occurs in Australia as the basis of a continuing industry, rather than simply putting that Australian capital in the hands of a foreign supplier to deliver the satellites to an Australian service industry. So We are not sure precisely how that money will be spent. We are talking with, for instance, the Department of Defense to see if there is an independent surveillance capacity, the technology of which could be met through a LEO that we could in fact put into space with an Australian rocket. We are talking to meteorology about whether there is in fact a need within meteorology that could be met with a low Earth orbiting satellite. We are seeking to find useful LEOs that we could put into space in order to show internationally that Australia has the indigenous capacity to participate in this new commercial environment. Now, that is basically the project of national significance, which is described in some detail in the five-year plan. It is an overlay over what is an existing level of activity. That is, the continuing activity of the separate elements that make up our industry. It is an integrating project that could give us a real presence in a commercial environment. There is no commitment from government. The minister is hopeful to get this whole project and the plan before his colleagues out of the context of the budget surrounding the decisions of early next year, and he is working to that end. Not only is the minister working on those responsibilities as he perceives and takes very seriously, but Malcolm himself is working equally hard within the bureaucratic structures that may in fact limit the opportunities for new spends to get in front of government. Let me simply say of the minister that in carrying out these feasibility studies and important studies in terms of market potential that we're doing at the moment and the evaluation of both Darwin and Woomera, we have this year through the council been able to achieve an increase of $2.5 million in the normal budget of the Space Office of $6.5 million a year, which we believe to be a promising performance both by the Minister and by Malcolm in his role within the bureaucracy in Canberra. So they are the dimensions of what we have put forward in this five-year plan. They are the beginnings, we think, of a potential industry in Australia which is new and could be continuing and of great significance. It seems to us that there is no industry that could more significantly display Australia's technological competence than to be a player in the space industry in the integrated way that I describe. And we believe that the five-year plan is feasible and shows some potential in displaying that technological